This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents Crush It. Why now is the time to cash in on your passion? By Gary Vaynerchuk. Read by the author. Copyright 2009 by Gary Vaynerchuk. Production copyright 2009 by HarperCollins Publishers.
Before I go into chapter one, I just wanted to thank everybody who's listening to this right now. It's amazingly humbling to think that people care enough about you to support your thoughts. And, you know, I'm very driven by gratitude. I've come to realize even since I wrote this book that that is my driving force. And I just want to thank you so much. I'm just super thankful and super grateful. And I wish you guys nothing but the best. And thank you so much. And bear with me as I go through this journey first time, but I'm excited about it. So let's get going. Chapter 1. Passion is everything. How badly do you want to crush it? Is it an all-consuming feeling? Do you stay awake at night, your brain swimming with ideas and dreams? Are you willing to do whatever it takes for the chance to live entirely on your own terms? If so, you are lucky. You're lucky because you live in an age of unmatched opportunity for anyone with enough hustle, patience, and big dreams. I should know, since that's what I had to work with. 3 years ago, I was an anomaly. A guy with very limited technology skills. Very limited. Who used social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr to build a highly fulfilling and profitable personal brand. Back then, a lot of people were unwilling to accept that the business world and society was changing. And if I had tried to tell you that you could build a business that creates wealth and the most happiness you've ever known with nothing more than passion and a willingness to work your face off, you might have not believed me. Now, though, the opportunities are endless. I don't think enough people have yet grasped just how much society and business and even the internet has changed. And my story is about to become a lot less unusual. If you want it badly enough, it can become your story in a lot less time and for a lot less money. Here's how fast change has taken hold. I helped take my dad's liquor store, Shoppers Discount Liquors, and blew it up from a $4 million to a $50 million a year business in 8 years, from 98 to 2005. I'm proud of that. But aside from a ton of hard work, it took millions of dollars in advertising with the New York Times, Wine Spectator, and other publications, as well as radio stations and local TV. Compare that with when I started building my personal brand back in 2006. To this day, it's cost me a far less amount of money. Let's say less than 15 grand. But it's cost me a lot of sweat. And I'm having more fun than I've ever had in my entire life. You've got sweat, right? You may not have the connections or the wealth or even the education. But with enough passion and enough sweat, you can make a lot happen. Three rules. You may have picked up this book because you want to know the secret to my success. Well, the secret is that I live by three pretty darn simple rules. Number one, and by far number one. By the way, this should probably be number one, two, three, and four. But number one, love your family. Number two, work super hard. And number three, live your passion. That's it. Notice that I didn't mention the internet, social media, or even technology, even though they have been crucial to everything I've accomplished in the last few years. That's because I measure my success by how happy I am, not by how big my business is or how much money I've made. And thanks to following these three rules, I am 100% happy. Don't believe me? Think it's not possible? I promise you it is. If you don't already live the first principle, get on it now. Because what I'm going to tell you in this book is worthless if you're not taking care of your family. Your family always comes first. But if you've got that priority straight and you're working super hard and you're still not 100% happy, it's probably because you're not living your passion. And that, my friends, although is only one third of the secret to success, is the whole key to staking your claim in the new business world we all live by today. Live your passion. What does that mean anyway? It means that when you get up for work every morning, every single morning, you are pumped. because you get to talk about or work with or do the thing that interests you most in the world. You don't live for vacations because you don't need a break from what you're doing. Working, playing, and relaxing are one and the same. You don't even pay attention to how many hours you're working because to you, it's not really work. You're making money. But you do whatever it is you're doing for free. Does this sound like you? Are you living or just earning a living? You spend so much time at work. Why waste it doing anything other than what you love most? Life is too short for that. You owe it to yourself to make a massive change for the better. And all you have to do is go online and start using the tools waiting for you there. Now I'm going to veer off from the book here for a second because I want to talk about this for one half second. That sounds all la la la, life is zen, everything will work out. And I'm not naive. I really respect and understand that not everybody's going to go out and crush it. But the fact that you have an at bat, the fact that you have an opportunity to go out and do this and do it around what you love is super important. And I hope that the bigger issue here is not overlooked because that sounds so fantasy-like because it's shifting and the opportunity is real. What you need to know in this book, I'll explain step by step how to use all the social networking tools on the internet to take whatever it is that rocks your world, the activity that you would do every minute if you could, the topic that you just can't shut up about, the product that you would like to put in everyone's hand, and build it into not just a business, but a powerful personal brand that makes you all the money and, more important, brings you all the happiness you could ever want. For those of you already living your passion, but hungry to boost your business even further, you'll find some fresh ideas on how to do that, as will anyone interested in developing a strong brand identity for an already existing product or service. Among the topics we'll cover: how to correctly channel your passion into a blog followed by thousands of people interested in consuming your personal brand. What real hustle looks like. How to get the attention of advertisers itching to give you a portion of their $1 billion in ad revenue. Why building a personal brand through social media is crucial to professional survival and advancement, no matter what field you're in. Yes, I'm talking to you lawyers. Why you should make plans to grow your business around your personal brand and leave your current job, even if you're happily employed. How social networking gives you the data you need to find the next social trend and financial opportunity. Why savvy social networkers are great cocktail party guests and how you can become one too. How to monetize your interaction with every person you talk to online. The best marketing strategy ever. Where to fish for diverse sources of revenue. How companies should use social networks to shape their story and strengthen their brand. How to build legacy, which is always greater than currency and the mortar to a successful, lasting brand and business. Social media give entrepreneurs and businesses an unprecedented chance to engage with their customers and communicate their message. Those who can harness their passion to the unbelievable reach and power of these tools are in a position to crush it on a level the world has never seen. The game has changed, my friends. Everyone knows the internet represents one of the biggest cultural shifts since the printing press, but I think society has been slow to recognize that it represents the biggest shift in history in how we do business, like ever. It's matured from a haven for coding geeks to a second home for most Americans, who still spend countless hours shopping online, but who are also increasingly moving their social lives there thanks to networking sites like Facebook, YouTube, Flickr, Tumblr, and Twitter. It makes total sense that if this is where the eyeballs are going, this is where business has to go. Money goes where the people go. Where there is an audience, advertisers are eager to follow. They used to spend their money on traditional media: radio, television, newspapers, and magazines. Those platforms are losing eyeballs to the online world by the second, and many media companies never implemented the leaner, meaner business model they needed to stay alive. They're getting very close to being dead. If the survivors in the traditional media don't adjust to the new competitor, 30 years from now, our kids will examine them in museums with the same curiosity they now reserve for dinosaur bones and fossils. I'm going to make a lot of massive, bold statements in this book, but let me assure you that I'm not trying to be a shock jock. I wouldn't say anything unless I thought long and hard about it. After all, as I go off the script here, you know, this is my legacy, right? I'm not just throwing things at the dartboard and hoping one will stick, because in this new day and age, everything you say is documented. And so for all my misses, you know, this is not baseball. 3 out of 10 hits here doesn't cut it. This is the business world. So I'm talking about things I'm living and breathing, not just things I'm hoping will happen. So it's important that you guys understand that. Advertisers and companies need to spend money to stay alive. So why shouldn't they spend it on you? By building a personal brand using social media networks, you're practically doing them a favor. Since the only investment it takes to use these sites to grow a business is ridiculous amounts of time and hustle, these platforms are open to whoever has got the chops to get in the game. That's you, right? No excuses. But Gary, some of you might be saying, my passion isn't something cool and retail-friendly like wine. I'm into World of Warcraft. I'm obsessed with belly dancing. I regularly piss off my wife because I'd rather hole up in the basement with my friends playing cards than do anything else. I want to build a business, but there's no money to be made in that. Plus, I've got rent and mortgage, kids and elderly parents, student loans and car payments. Yeah, well, so did Perez Hilton and Zay Frank and Veronica Belmont and Heather Cox and Jessica Morgan. They totally crushed it. And you can too. Do it now. And again, I'm going to jump off script right now, because that's what an audiobook is about, right? You know, the fact of the matter is, you can say that you've got all these hurdles, but so does everybody. Nobody's got it easy coast to coast. Even the people that are rolling like P. Diddy and the trust fund babies, you know, they've got the money and the opportunity, but you know they've got the psychological hurdles that mommy and daddy gave it to them. Trust me, there is nobody who's got clear sailing. The important thing to understand is how these platforms are now free, and you could do that at any time. You could do it at 3 o'clock in the morning if you want it bad enough. So please, 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 please stop putting barriers around yourself, because it's bullcrap and nobody wants to hear it. If you want it bad enough, let's get into it. But Gary, someone else might say, have you kept up with the news over the past few years? The economy has taken a beating. A lot of people have lost jobs. Consumers are not spending like they once did. And advertisers are far more conservative than they used to be. I'm listening to this audiobook to plan ahead for the day when I know for sure it's a good time to start a business. I want everybody to pay attention right now. Yes, I'm off the script, but this is a big statement in the book, and I want you to get it. You know, you may even want to pull over your car right now, because this is a big one. It is never a bad time to start a business unless you're starting a mediocre business. And say it one more time. It's never a bad time. Guys, Microsoft was built during the Carter, you know, transition years to Reagan. It is never a bad time to start a business unless you're starting a mediocre business. I think economic downturns represent a huge opportunity for everyone to get their focus on and to start to crush it. The person who can dominate during rough times is the person who can dominate, period. Yes, we've seen a lot of people close up shop in the past years, but if they had offered a relevant and differentiated product or service, had they been adaptable, and most of all, had they know how to tell their story, and even more importantly than that, and I'm going off the script again, but that's how I roll, if they cared for their consumer and gave the proper customer service, they would have not had to close. I know that's an unpopular thing to say, but I think once you listen further and understand how our culture has changed and what the next generation, whether entrepreneurs or not, needs to do to make its mark, you'll agree with me. Booming economies like the one that recently ended keep all kinds of businesses afloat that should have sunk a long time ago. Once the winds shift, there's only room left for the best. What kind of business did you plan on starting? A mediocre one or one that kicks ass? You know the right answer. Follow the suggestions laid out on this book, and your business will be standing profitable for as long as you want it to be. But I'm going to veer off for just a second, because when I say follow the suggestions laid out in this book, yeah, I do think it's a blueprint, but following your DNA and doing what you love and doing what you do best is going to trump anything I say in this book. So please listen to that. Plus, you've achieved more professional happiness than you've ever imagined. Maybe you're out of work and you're thinking you might dabble with some of the ideas in this book every day after you send out your resume and make a few calls. By the way, the traditional resume is about to become obsolete, but more about that later. Tell me this, though. Did you jump up every morning eager to go to that job you lost? If not, why are you looking for another one just like it? You have an unbelievable opportunity, people. Use all this extra time you have to reinvent yourself or follow a totally different path from the one you were on before. Maybe one where the only thing at the end isn't a custom engraved watch that reads, "Thanks for the service," and a surf and turf farewell dinner to send you off into retirement. You can do better so long as you're willing to live and breathe your passion. Do that and you'll no longer differentiate between your work life and your personal life. You'll just live and love doing it. And for those of you still employed, even happily employed, this book is for you too. Mark my words, if you want to stay relevant and competitive in the coming years, I don't care if you're in sales, tech, finance, publishing, journalism, event planning, biz dev, retail, service, you name it, you will still need to develop and grow your personal brand. Everyone needs to start thinking of themselves as a brand. It's no longer an option. It's necessity. My DNA made me want to start businesses and go big and bold and conquer the world and crush the competition and buy the New York Jets. And there are a lot of you listening to this book who see what I've done and think, yeah, that's awesome. I've got a lot to share with you. But if that's not you, I think I can still help you out. Maybe your DNA is totally different from mine. You just want to live cozy, provide for your loved ones, prepare for the future, and not worry too much. You're set. The average U.S. salary is around 40 to 50K. You can earn that doing a job you love or a job you hate. Please choose love. Of course, money and security matters. And I'm very aware that many people live paycheck to paycheck. Let me reiterate that the process I'm going to be talking about takes a lot of time, effort, focus, but not a lot of dollars, if any. That, my friends, is game changer. Everyone has a shot. Not just the ones with extra cash. Learn to live your passion and you'll have the money you need plus total control over your destiny. That's a pretty comfortable place to be, wouldn't you say? This means you. What if you just don't have a hard business instinct? Don't worry. Skills are cheap. Passion is priceless. If you're passionate about your content and you know it and you do it better than anyone else, even with few formal business skills, you'll have the potential to create a multi-million dollar business. Here's why. Let's say you love fish and you happen to know a load about worms. In fact, you're embarrassed at how much you like worms and like to talk about worms. But there's no way you can make money on worms, right? Wrong. You can use the internet to build a platform where you can talk about worms to your heart's content. Passion is contagious. If you channel it into creating amazing content and distribute that content using the social media tools I discussed in this book, someone like me who rocks at biz dev, business development for everybody out there, will eventually find it and become a fan. The day I hear you say that you can use a particular kind of worm to catch 80% more bass than you thought otherwise, I'm going to see a business opportunity and I'm going to contact you. Together, we create an online show or a written blog or an audio podcast around your passion to reach the fishing marketplace. By the way, a $1 billion industry. We launch the content and people are immediately drawn to you. We build a community by capitalizing on all the social media tools and techniques at our disposal. We work as many hours as possible. And the next thing we know, we have the biggest fishing lure company in the country asking to advertise on our site. From there, we start building word of mouth and opening up more revenue streams. And ka-ching, your passion for worms in tandem with my passion for biz dev will inevitably result in a business that crushes it. Thanks to the accessibility and reach of social media and the zero cost, anybody listening to this can do it. Salesman Steve, who rocked selling for Blockbuster, needs to find one-man stand, the Fellini fan, and build a $1 million movie review business. Joanne Jogger, who chronicles her marathon training, needs to find marketer Marvin and create a running blog that kills it and attracts Nike as a sponsor. There is room for everyone in the world of social media, which is the same thing as saying that there is room for everyone in today's business world. I have a big statement to make. Social media equals business. Period. And if you want me to expand on that, feel free to email me when you get to a computer at gary@winelibrary.com. Everybody wins in these scenarios. Stan and Joanne may seem like the big winners because they're enjoying some fame. Yet, off in the back room, Steve and Marvin are living their passion. Believe me, they're rocking that party hard. In fact, for all the web fame and national TV appearances and coverage I have received, it's the behind-the-scenes brand building that has given me more happiness than anything else. I'm going to veer off the script for a second. Those first 50 episodes of Wine Library TV, the platform I used to build my brand, they were exciting. I mean, that was the time. Those were the days. You know, knowing that I was building something that was going to be big, that little secret with myself before it became everybody else's, that was the real moment. It's probably like an amazing musician when they write a great song and they cut the track and they just know it. Those months before everybody's listening to it and repeating it, those are the real cherishable moments. Maybe you're listening to this and thinking, cool, I'm a business person. I don't have to think about my passion. I just have to find someone else who's passionate and use their content to create business. Maybe. If your passion, your true blue passion, isn't business development and marketing and sales, you need to figure out what that is and do that instead. Otherwise, you will fail. If you do have the passion for biz dev, however, you may not need a partner at all. I didn't. It's up to you. The messages in this book are timeless. Do what makes you happy. Keep it simple. Do the research. Work hard. Look ahead. Remember that when I started Wine Library TV in 2006, Facebook was still a college play, and I didn't want to be the creepy guy peddling wine to underage kids, so I couldn't use it to bring an audience to my online show. Twitter had just been born, and no one knew what it was. Once these social networking platforms caught on with the general population, however, I was all over them and knew how to make them work for me. But they only accelerated my success. They didn't create it. Keep that in mind as you start to put your dreams and plans into action. The tools we're going to discuss in this book will spread your ideas and give your personal brand more traction in far less time and for far less money than you might have been able to do otherwise. But they are only as powerful as the person who uses them. Their power is also only as strong as their most recent incarnation. Technology and innovation and consumer demand are working together at such a frenzied pace that by the time you listen to this, some of the capabilities and reach of these platforms will have already changed. Regardless of what changes we see in the little details in the user interface or individual features of these tools, they won't affect the big picture. You can pimp your ride, but that doesn't change the essence of how you travel in your car. These tools will take you to your audience, where you can follow them, reach out, and make them listen. I can show you how to use social media to plant a garden or build a new house. Some of you want to be mayor of the whole damn city, and I can also help you get there. But no matter how modestly or how high you set your sights, you have to keep tending and adjusting and making improvements once I'm gone. No matter how successful you get, you can't slack off, or the grass is going to grow, the paint is going to peel, and the roads will start to crumble. Stop hustling, and everything you learn here will be useless. Your success is really entirely up to you. Turn water into wine. Here's the deal. If you want it badly enough, the money is there, the success is there, and the fulfillment is there. All you have to do is take it. So quit whining. Quit crying. Quit with the excuses. If you already have a full-time job, you can get a lot done between 7 p.m. and 2 a.m. 9 p.m. and 3 a.m. if you've got kids. So learn to love working during these pre-dawn hours. I promise, it won't be hard if you're doing what you love more than anything else. I don't care if your passion is rehabilitating abandoned ferrets. If you learn to tap into everything that the digital world has to offer, you can turn water into wine. You can transform what you love into a legacy building business that makes a crap load of money and still be true to yourself. Ultimately, this book is not about making millions of dollars, although it just might help you do that. It's about ensuring your own happiness by enabling you to live every day passionately and productively. Business is not just about making money, people. And if you think it is, you're broken. Seriously, you're broken. If you're already familiar with the social marketing tools we'll discuss in this book, I hope you'll pay attention to the big picture. It's too easy to forget what really matters once you're digging deep into the trenches. Learn to navigate the digital waters of social marketing to build a business and promote a personal brand around what you love most, and you will only be limited by how far you want to sail. Social media tools, Facebook, Twitter, Flickr, all the rest, are modern-day galleons that will carry you to the new world, allowing you to share your passion, differentiate yourself from your competitors, and deliver your brand to the broadest possible audience. My secret to success is just one guy's way of doing things, of course. But do things my way, adapted to what works for your DNA, of course, and total happiness is yours. Chapter 2, Success is Your DNA. I am a walking contradiction. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go off the script here right now. I'm seriously considering writing my next book about contradiction. It's a core principle of my success, but we'll get into that the next time I'm reading here. No one believes in himself more than I do, yet I'm well aware of how unimportant I really am. I couldn't care less what people think about me, but I do respect and pay attention to what they say. When viewers posted comments on a recent episode of Dignation, one of the biggest video blogs, by the way, on the internet, saying that I was obnoxious in the forums of the show, I stayed up to 4 a.m. apologizing to every one of them. I love building businesses and launching new ventures, but the only reason I value money is that I'm going to need a lot of it when I buy the New York Jets. I think a lot of you who are listening to this know I'm not kidding. I really do want to own the Jets. This has been an obsession of mine pretty much since third grade, so I'm grinding. I'm trying to get there. And although the story of how I became what ABC News calls the social media sommelier, as Slate referred to me as the wine guru of the YouTube era, and as Nightline named me the Wayne's World wine aficionado, is in some ways the most common immigrant makes good story ever told. It's also unheard of, not only because the technology that made it possible didn't exist until a few years ago, but because no one else has my DNA. For a business guy, I talk a lot about DNA, and this book will be no exception. That's because I firmly believe that the path to your successful business literally lies in the twists and turns of your own double helix. In fact, I should probably just credit the success of Wine Library TV, the online wine tasting video blog that put me on the social media map, to my mom and dad, who gave me the DNA that enabled me to take my career to that thunderous level. Then again, lots of ambitious people have been born with great DNA and yet eventually found themselves at a professional standstill, frustrated, miserable, stuck. Why? Because they weren't doing what they loved more than anything else in the world. They weren't doing what they were born to do. You gotta be you, guys. You just gotta be you. I got lucky. From a very early age, I knew I was born to be a people person and to build businesses. Those were and have always been my passions. I knew I was made to be an entrepreneur, and not once did I try to be anything else, as evidenced by all the D's and F's in my ridiculously awful report cards. I'd bring them home and give them to my mother. She'd flip. You know, this is insane. I'm going to veer off for a second. I mean, my mom is my life. I love her more than breathing. The person that I credit so much of everything I have to, who gave me the greatest childhood, and I still couldn't bring home B's. She would have taken C's. And it was so easy for me to go there, and I still wouldn't. I just would never compromise. And I don't know why, even for the person I love the most. And so, you know, anyway, let's get back to this. You know, even though I hated to make my mom cry, I also knew that I had to be me. And if that meant hiding the Beckett baseball price guide inside my math book during class so I could read up for my next trade show, that's what it had to be. Too many people ignore their DNA, however, to conform to what their families or society expects of them. A lot of people also decided that professional success has to look a certain way. That's how someone born to design bikes winds up becoming a lawyer, or someone who loves experimenting with makeup works every day pitching someone else's overpriced brands to malls around the country, or someone who cannot go a day without jotting down some ideas for their next poem spends most of their time at the helm of an emergency IT department. To me, that's insane. I've been dying to do this audiobook. Not because I think I can help everyone who wants to become a millionaire, although I'm pretty sure I can, but because it drives me crazy to know that there are still people out there who haven't figured out that they don't have to settle. There's no excuse to slog through his or her entire life at jobs they hate, or even jobs they simply don't love in the name of a paycheck or a sense of responsibility. The internet makes it possible for anyone to be 100% true to themselves and make cash, maybe even serious cash, by turning what they love most into their personal brand. There no longer has to be a difference between who you are and what you do. Now, as cuddly and cozy as this follow your bliss message might seem, make no mistake. If you do things the way I tell you to do them, you're going to work harder than you've ever worked in your life. But I'm of the opinion that hardship shapes us. Coming from nothing served my family well. It also gave me the hunger to want it all and the wisdom to know none of it matters. I'm convinced, in fact, that if things had been a little easier for my family in the early days, I never would have gotten to where I am now. To tell that story, we have to go back to the old country. Coming to America, kinda. Little Eddie Murphy style. My family moved here from Belarus, the former Soviet Union, in 1978. My dad, Sasha, was inspired to come to the States by a great uncle who had immigrated years before. He came back to Belarus to visit his sister, and that's how my father learned that America was a place where you could build a life for yourself according to your own rules, and you didn't have to wait 6 hours in line to buy a loaf of bread either. A natural entrepreneur, my father knew that America was where his family's future lay. As Jews, we were given special permission to seek political asylum abroad, and after months of working through red tape and cooling our heels in Austria and Italy, we finally landed in Queens, New York. Unfortunately, my great uncle died right before our journey began, yet his children were kind to us. Mom, Dad, 3-year-old me, back then named Gennadzi, that's right, that's my real name, my grandmother, and my great-grandparents, until we could move into a studio apartment arranged by a Jewish foundation. We arrived certain that the streets were paved with gold. I mean, that's what everybody said in Russia. Grandma got mugged within 6 weeks. The economy was tanking. The construction job my dad had arranged before arriving to the country evaporated within a few months. Again, my great uncle's family helped out by offering my dad a job as a stock boy in one of their liquor stores in Clark, New Jersey. Times were tough. I still get emotional when I think about the time my parents walked a few miles to Kmart to buy me not one but 2 Star Wars action figures for my 6th birthday. For families on a tight budget like us, my sister Elizabeth was born by then, that was a huge deal. I don't remember anyone complaining much about money, though, or about anything else for that matter. We had our health, and we had one another. What more did we really need? And as a side note off the script, we had opportunity. We were grateful for that. We had a shot. And that bat, and my dad really took advantage of that. We assimilated quickly. My parents changed my name to Gary when we arrived, but inside the home, it was still Belarus. No way was my mother plopping down meatloaf for dinner like those American moms. In our house, we ate stuffed cabbage and smoked herring. We never took medicine, only tea. And if you were really sick, you rubbed vodka on your chest. I never wanted to tell anyone I'd gotten a cut or burn on my hand because they would immediately suggest that I pee on it. That's right, Grandma, I'm calling you out. Those pee things were disgusting, but I still love you. My dad was smart, and he knew how to hustle, so it didn't take long for him to work his way up and become manager, then co-owner of a small liquor store in Clark. By 1983, he had bought a small store the size of an office with a partner in Springfield, and later he built that same store up to a 4,000-square-foot store. Years later, after I got involved in the business, we built the current wine library in the same property. It's now 40,000 square feet, a far cry from the original store, which was called Shoppers Discount Liquors and looked exactly like what you would think Shoppers Discount Liquors should look like. My parents were hungry to provide for their family and hungry to win. My dad worked his ass off, so much that I really didn't get to know him until I was 14 years old. Yet I have tremendous respect for what he did for us. Thanks to his hard work and chutzpah, we became the epitome of an American success story. In 1978, we were broke and couldn't speak English. In 1985, I was the first kid on my block to have Nintendo. You can see why my dad is my hero. My gratitude for what he did drives my own ambition to take my business to higher and higher levels. Rise of the entrepreneur. On the surface, my dad and I are very different. Though I have a lot of his fire and hustle, I'm a lot like my mom, super emotional and a true people person, open to everyone from day one, but very strong inside. Dad is a tougher guy to get close to. He is slower to let you in, but once he does, you are family. I respect him to no end, but I wish more people could get to know him. The other big differences between us is that he allows his emotions to lead his decisions. I'm all about passion, but letting your emotional trigger finger make your business calls is a big no-no in my book. Going off the script, I think my DNA is there, and I think the fact that my dad made all his calls on emotion probably pushed me to the extreme edge of not going there. Though, when it comes to football, as many of you have seen on my Facebook status and Twitter, you know, I can get very emotional and start calling the Patriot names, so I'll publicly apologize for calling any football players and coaches' names here right now. I apologize, but it's how I roll. I love the Jets. I get sports muscles, so sorry about that. Anyway, observing me from an early age, however, no one could deny that my dad's entrepreneurial DNA ran strong through me. The only thing I loved more than running a business and making money was the New York Jets. My neighbor always said that no season was safe. In the summer, I would wash her car. In the fall, I'd rake her leaves, and I'd shovel her snow through winter. There was one spring when I cut the flowers in her yard, then rang her doorbell and sold the flowers back to her. I'm still kind of proud of that initiative. The profit margin was amazing. I sat on the inventory for 2 seconds. It still might be the best business I ever built. By the time I was 8 years old, I had 7 lemonade stands and was raking in crazy amounts of cash for someone who's still scared to ride a bike. My fear was problematic, considering that my franchises were located all around the neighborhood. Everyone could hear me coming from a mile away as I roared around on my big wheels to pick up my money. Hey, 80s kids, you remember the big wheels, right? Those were the greatest. I miss mine. I'm going to have to buy one at a garage sale. My real business education began when I caught baseball card fever. My mom had taken me to a flea market where I bought some packs of baseball cards as well as a copy of Beckett Baseball Card Price Guide. It revealed that there was actual value to these cards I'd bought. I can still remember that feeling as I realized that my whole world has changed. It was the same feeling I'd get later when I saw the market potential for wine, when I saw the internet for the first time, when I watched my first video blog. It was like game over. Goodbye, lemonade stands. Hello, baseball cards. We moved to Hunterdon County, New Jersey when I was in 8th grade. Baseball cards were on like Donkey Kong in my new school, and within weeks, I was raking in the dough. One day, the local mall announced they were hosting a baseball card show. And there was no way I was going to miss it. I was already a $100 player thanks to selling cards to my 8th grade classmates. So I mustered up the courage and asked my dad for the biggest number I could ever think of. $1,000. Unbelievably, though in hindsight, that's just who my dad is, he gave it to me. The money was burning a hole in my pocket. So I immediately went to Costco. It was called Price Club back then. And spent it on a ton of boxes of cards. I knew they weren't a good year, but I was impatient. This was the last time that I would ever be impatient when it came to business. Sure enough, when I opened them up and looked up the values, I found out they were only worth about $200. Oh man, was I in trouble. 80% of my value gone, out the window. My mom drove my two partners, Jason Riker and John Churchak, and me to the mall so we could buy a table at the show. We had agreed ahead of time that we wouldn't buy a table if it cost more than $20. We asked for the promoter when we got to the mall, and this 400-pound Italian dude comes out. I'm serious, this guy came out of Central Casting. It was epic. His t-shirt didn't even cover his whole belly. I said, I remember this clearly. I said, "Hey mister, how much for the show?" He replied, $150. I handed over the money and shook the guy's hand and walked away. ignoring my friends' gaping mouths. My brain was telling me that this was a terrible idea, but my gut said, go for it. And I've always listened to my gut. By the time I got home and told my dad and mom what I had done, I almost was in tears. But true to form, they didn't throttle me, even though I'm sure they wanted to. Instead, my dad said he'd hoped that losing the money would become worth the experience. My dad's a wise man. I went to my room determined to show him that I wasn't in it just for the experience. The fire was burning, and there was no way I was going to lose. I wanted to show it and prove it to my dad. The next day, we set up our table, and the first thing I did was market research. I walked around the show checking out what everyone else was selling. I then adjusted, repricing every card we had available for less than anyone else was selling it. We crushed it and made straight cash. From then on, I did every show I could. My mom and fellow card dealer and best friend Brandon Warnke's mom would drive us in the snow, rain, to Bridgewater, Hillsboro, Edison, Raritan, anywhere there was a show, and every time I'd dominate. I had just learned one of my first lessons in business. Scarcity breeds desire. My strategy was simple. I'd buy sets that weren't mentioned in Beckett's and promote them to create a market. You're thinking, geez, Gary, what a scam artist you were. Not at all. I was an optimist. A pessimist would have seen these cards as unlisted and assumed they were worthless. I, on the other hand, quite innocently decided that if these cards weren't in the guide, they had to be valuable. I paid back my dad his $1,000 in about 3 to 4 months. I continued to earn this kind of money every weekend I could. Then I turned 15 and got dragged out of the mall and into the liquor store. Learning the trade. To go from self-made baseball card king of Hunterdon County, rolling in dough, to grunt bagging ice for $2 an hour was a hard fall. It wasn't until I turned 16 that I was even allowed up on the floor and became a cashier. Not too exciting, but it beat hours of shoveling ice and dusting shelves. I couldn't drink anything we sold. My parents were pretty strict about that, which is kind of shocking. You know, European family, owning a liquor store. You would have thought they could have slipped me a little something, but I respect it. But I was good at regurgitating data. So when business was slow, I flipped through trade magazines to pass the time and then use what I've learned to help customers. One of those magazines was Wine Spectator. Now, the store was called Shoppers Discount Liquors for a reason. Most of our business came from selling the hard stuff. Beer, too, was a big seller. The beer cooler, in fact, pretty much took up 33% of the entire store. But I learned two things from my time behind the cash register. First, thanks to Wine Spectator, I learned that there was a whole culture cachet to drinking wine and that people collected it in the same way I collected baseball cards or Star Wars toys or comic books. That was interesting to me. I also noticed a pattern. People would come in and buy their Absolut or their Johnny Walker, and I knew that I or anyone in the staff could talk until we were blue in the face about another brand and they would still walk out with their Absolut or Johnny Walker. Those brands were just too established. The wine buyer, though, would often walk in looking a little lost, spend 10 minutes tentatively peering at labels as though they were hoping for a bottle to jump out and spare them from making a decision. I knew from my expertise with baseball cards that people want to be told what's good and valuable, that they enjoy feeling like they've been turned onto something not everyone can appreciate. Again, time to pull off on the side of the road and really swallow this piece of information. Storytelling is by far the most underrated skill when it comes to business. The wine buyers, unlike the liquor customers, were open to any suggestions I had, and I realized that they represented opportunity. Spotting that social trend was enough to turn what started out as a casual interest in wine into an obsession. I started out at Shoppers Discount Liquors, hating every second of my time there, but now I was determined to turn the place into the number one wine shop in America. Changing the wine world. No one had any illusions that I was a great scholar as I started my senior year of high school. So it made sense to me that my plan should be to eke out the grades, graduate, and start working full-time at the liquor store. Sometime in February. Yes, February. Sorry, Mom. I know everybody's going to be like, February? I have to call you out a little bit here, but you know it's true. My mother asked me, what college was I planning to attend? Oh, by the way, February of senior year. Yeah, I just wanted to zing her one more time. College? You know, college was the furthest thing from my mind at that point. I really thought that I was going to be able to sneak through. Since my parents hadn't talked about college, I didn't send any, you know, applications. So, you know, college? What are you talking about, Mom? As luck would have it, a postcard from Mount Ida College in Newton, Mass. Showed up in the mail a few days after this conversation. I filled it out, and Mount Ida became my home in the fall. By then, though, my life was the store, and I'd come home almost every weekend to work there. In September of 95, I was hanging out in a friend's dorm room when he turned on his computer and introduced me to this thing called the internet. I let my friends bumble around in chat rooms trying to hook up with girls for a little while, and then I kicked them off and spent the next 9 hours hunting down baseball card trading forums and figuring out how I was going to use this thing to grow the store. There was no doubt in my mind this was going to be the future of business. It would take me another year to get the courage to approach my dad about selling wine online. What can I say? My dad's kind of a scary dude. And at first, he kind of resisted, but he believed in me at that point. And as soon as he relented, I was off to the races. WineLibrary.com was launched in June of 1997. The store itself wouldn't have changed to Wine Library full-time until 1999. We were kind of limbo there for 2 years as I tried to convince my dad it was a good move. The store brought in about $3 million a year in 94. I came on board full-time after graduating in 98 and grew the business from about $4 million to $10 million in a year, with 0% of that being in online sales. By 2001, we were doing about $20 million. Not bad. Not bad at all. Life was good and business was booming. Most guys my age would have thought they've made it. But then, on my 30th birthday, November 14th, 2005, I was driving along the New Jersey Turnpike on my way to work, thinking about my day, and I realized that as perfect as life seemed, I wasn't entirely happy. Not 100% anymore. I knew deep down in my soul that there was no way I was ever going to buy the Jets if I stayed in the retail path. See, the problem is, liquor laws suck. Some of you driving in Maryland and Boston right now, I can't ship you wine. So I basically said to myself, it was time to go big. We had a computer department at Wine Library by now, and I had seen Eric Kastner and John Casamatis spending their lunch breaks spitting food all over themselves and laughing at these things called video blogs. The two big ones at the time were Rocket Boom and The Show with Zay Frank. I had been trying to figure out how to leverage this new medium to show people that there was more to drink out there than Yellowtail. I'd also noticed that sites like MySpace and Flickr and YouTube were becoming popular. Sites that had nothing to do with commerce and everything to do with being social and sharing stories and meeting people. And that was something I was good at. It was there, on the New Jersey Turnpike, that I had my aha moment. I wasn't going to use video blogs to sell wine. I was going to use video blogs to build a whole new world for wine and for myself. I waited to get the store through the holidays, and then I launched Wine Library TV in February of 2006, 3 months later. Chapter 3, Build Your Personal Brand. You just heard a piece of my story that most people don't know, and it's probably the most important part. I'll say it again. Wine Library TV was never about selling wine on the internet. It was always about building brand equity. Some people might point out that if I weren't interested in selling wine, I wouldn't include links to buy it on Wine Library TV's site. Believe me, I'd be making more money doing an affiliate program with wine.com than I do with my links to winelibrary.com. I'm a businessman. If someone wants to buy wine from me, be my guest. However, so that no one can accuse The Thunder Show, which is a nickname for Wine Library TV, of being an extended sales pitch, I make sure that Wine Library only carries 15 or fewer cases of whatever I talk about. By the way, let me put in a little subnote here. The first 40 or 50 shows of Wine Library TV, I did not do that because I just wasn't thinking about it all the way that way. So let me just mention that. Anyway, if I give something a good review and it sells out, everyone has to go elsewhere to get it. If the goal of Wine Library TV were to sell wine, I'd make sure to have enough product on hand to serve my customers. Wine Library, our store, doesn't reap commercial benefits from Wine Library TV because of an uptick in sales due to my blog. It reaps brand equity benefits because people come to the store to see what it's all about, where I work, where I tape the show, that stuff. Sometimes they come to thank me for the content on my blog, which, by the way, I really, really appreciate. And all you college kids, when you turn 21 and make the schlep to Wine Library, that's a big deal to me. So keep emailing me because I want to be there, because some of you have missed me. So thanks so much for that. Developing your personal brand is key to monetizing your passion online. Whether you're delivering your content by video, podcast, or blog, it's the authentic you, the one thing that is guaranteed to differentiate you from everyone else, including those who share your niche or business model. The thing that most people don't realize is that in today's world, your business and your personal brand need to be one and the same, whether you're selling organic fish food or financial advice or just your opinion. Monetizing a personal brand is not a new concept. A lot of the most successful entertainment figures in the world are personal brand geniuses. Oprah, Howard Stern, Emerald. They built their empires out of being who they are and never backing down from it. But the major benefits of a personal brand are not limited to the A-list celebrities. In fact, personal branding is what gives everyone an unprecedented shot at joining their ranks. For example, think about what some people consider second-tier celebrities like Ashton Kutcher or Kerry Rhodes. Kutcher was already famous for his stints on television, not to mention his marriage to Demi Moore. But there is no doubt that his brand has blown up since he started leveraging social media tools. Rhodes, the New York Jets football player, has been using Twitter with incredible success to make his brand bigger. D2C level entertainment figures like Will Wheaton, Brooke Burke, LeVar Burton, and Fred Durst are building great opportunities that will likely propel them from B or D or C to A level status. How do I know? Because I can see how many people are following them on their Twitter accounts. Now, usually I advise people to ignore the quantity of people following them and to focus instead on the quality of their interactions with those followers. It's a lot more indicative of how well their brand is doing. Many decision makers, however, still aren't aware of this important detail, and therefore, the preceding celebrities will benefit from those nice numbers we're seeing. Where do the eyeballs go? Opportunity follows. Last, but by no means least, are the people whom you might have never heard of, who are putting out great content and leveraging social media and killing it. Oh, wait a minute. Crushing it. Like Dave Morin, Chris Sacca, and Justine Ezrick, and Kevin Rose. Their personal brands are skyrocketing, and there's no reason to think that eventually they won't become household names. You see where I'm going with this? The first generation built their brands on television and movie screens, radio, magazines, and newspapers. The new one will do the same online at a much lower cost, with no need for gatekeepers' approval. Get into position, because the big killing is coming around the corner. The field may be different, but the game is the same. By the way, little side note, veering off, the gatekeepers I'm talking about is there's no editor at the New York Times who's going to tell the world or decide if your writing is good enough to talk to the world. There's no producer or director in Hollywood who's going to be making the decision if you're pretty enough, skinny enough, have the right look anymore. You can just put it out there and let America decide, and that's a big deal. Building my brand. If you watch me on WineLibraryTV.com, you'll figure out my personal brand pretty quickly. I'm the guy who tells you like it is in plain English. It's a brand that I've been able to develop from a very early age, thanks to growing up in the wine industry. I'd attend $1,000 a head tastings and rub elbows with experienced connoisseurs who lived a long time in the wine trenches. This meant that they had lots of expertise to share with a relative newcomer like me. It also meant that they carried a load of baggage in the form of preconceived notions of how things should be. They'd swirl and smell and slurp and spit and then spout some classic terminology every single time. How the bouquet was rose petals or the finish was silk. I would stick my nose in my glass, suck in a mouthful of air and wine, and the only thing running through my head would be, man, this really tastes like Big League Chew. Or is anybody else getting the whatchamacallit bar on this? I really don't know what this is. It's not that I couldn't spout out an A to Z wine-tasting lexicon and didn't appreciate the complexities of an excellent vintage. I knew my Malbecs from my Montepulciano's. I just didn't see why I had to use the same 45-cent words to describe my experience when drinking it. On top of that, everyone, including the reviewers, was drinking and admiring the same damn stuff. If Cloudy Bay Sauvignon Blanc were featured as the best white of 1998, we'd see a huge surge in demand for it in the store. Never mind that as far as I was concerned, the Babbage was a million times better and a better deal since it cost half the price. It was clear to me that the industry was stuck in a rut, and my experience in the store told me that people were dying for someone to take the mystery out of wine buying and make it fun. And I thought, this I can do. So I became the wine guy, and that's how I built my personal brand. Not with wine per se. I offer my personal brand, not wine, on Wine Library TV. Every episode gives me a chance to share my considerable expertise with other people interested in the same thing I am, which is loads of fun. They also give me a chance to share myself. Watch me for 2 seconds and you'll know exactly who I am and what I stand for. Authenticity is the key. Now that can definitely be a double-edged sword. I know there are people out there who think I'm a jerk with my jet spit bucket, my table littered with toys, and my colorful language. I'm loud. I'm over the top. I'm hyper. Recently somebody said I'm East Coast for East Coast. But I am who I am. I'm for real. And overall, people like that. People watch and they listen. And they even learn a thing or two and sometimes agree with me that, hell yes, that Riesling does taste like a racquetball. I give wine lovers the permission to like any kind of wine they like, whether it's white Zinfandel or a serious Bordeaux. I cultivated another brand too, of course. The one that got me this book deal, and the keynote speeches, and the consulting gigs, and has helped me, along with my brother AJ, build VaynerMedia. For almost 2 years, I was patient. I let people get to know me and trust my wine guy personal brand. Then, in October 2007, I decided I needed to scratch my own itch. The world was ready to know that I was more than just a funny guy who knows a lot about wine. I woke up one morning and thought, it's time to talk biz. And I started airing videos of me talking about my real passion, building brands and businesses. Regardless of which brand people are drawn to, my popularity stems from the fact that I know what the hell I'm talking about, and that I'm honest. For all my charisma and entertainment value, if the content I was putting out wasn't any good and couldn't be trusted, nobody would be watching. Nobody. To everyone who is freaking out because they fear the noise and distraction of all the additional content on the internet, you can relax. Quality is a ridiculous filter. Cream always rises, my friends, no matter how many cups of coffee you pour. Opportunity lies in transparency. Consumers want you to tell them the truth. Sure, they want quality and service and value and entertainment. But above all, they want to know that the person they're dealing with is being honest. Entrepreneurs don't really have a choice. The lines between the private and public are becoming increasingly blurred. People are able to share their experience and thoughts and photographs on video by spraying them all over the internet within minutes after they happen. The days of being able to con the customer without repercussions are pretty much over. So no matter how you shape and color your personal brand, honesty has to be at your core. I come online 5 days a week and taste and review wines. Some wines are tremendous. Some taste like horse crap. Do the makers of these wines I pan like me? Probably not. Do I care? You know, in the book I said nope. In the audiobook I'll tell you, sure, I mean, I don't want to be disliked and I hate hurting people's feelings and I love people. So from a business sense, no, I don't. But from a personal sense, it does hurt my feelings. Do I sell some of the ones that I think taste bad? You bet I do, because you might totally disagree with me. Someone at the winery who made it sure did. All I'm doing on my blog is being myself and voicing my opinion, loud and clear. When you launch your videos blogs, podcasts, you're going to be doing the same. That goes for everyone, including those of you who are used to keeping information close to the vest, or you will lose, one way or another. And I want to veer off again, because I want to make myself clear about that statement. Here's the problem. Information is being put out daily, quickly, faster than ever. So if you sit on information,